The China Global South podcast is supported in part by the Africa-China Reporting Project at Wits University in Johannesburg and by our subscribers. Thank you. If you'd like to subscribe for daily news and exclusive analysis about every aspect of China's engagement in Africa, Asia, and throughout the developing world, go to chinaglobalsouth.com/subscribe.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the China Global South podcast, a proud member of the Seneca Podcast Network. I'm Eric Olander in Ho Chi Minh City, and today we have a show that I'm really, really excited to talk about because it's one of the topics of conversations that we've been having here in Vietnam and Southeast Asia, but very few people outside of the region really know much at all about this. Now, last September or so, this is the first time I heard of the Funan Techo Canal. And it was brought to my attention by a diplomat who said, "Do you know what's going on with this canal project in Cambodia?" And I said, "No, I have no idea." And since then, it has turned into a huge issue. And it's one that those of you not in the region who are following this from afar should really know more about. Let me give you a little bit of background about what's going on. So when Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Manet took office last year, one of his first priorities was to jumpstart this $1.7 billion waterway project known as the Funan Techo Canal. Now, this is a two-lane canal that runs 180 kilometers inland from the capital, Phnom Penh, all the way across four provinces to the port of Kep on the Gulf of Thailand. The goal here is to reduce shipping costs from inland Cambodia that will help garment manufacturers, agricultural producers, and other exporters to reduce some of their logistics costs by, some estimates have it as high as 30%. So there's a lot at stake for Cambodia's exporters. All of this sounds great, especially for a country as poor and as underdeveloped as Cambodia is today. And to be sure, there are a lot of exciting things actually going on in Cambodia today that are fascinating to follow. It's one of the stories that I keep a close watch on, particularly in the tech sector, and just a lot of changes. Even Prime Minister Hun Manet has been just making the rounds all over the world, trying to draw investment. At the same time, there's been a massive crackdown in civil liberties and freedoms. So fascinating dynamics that are going on there. But back to the canal project, it's causing a lot of controversy, even though it really offers those exporters some huge opportunities. Let's start with the fact that, not surprisingly, Cambodia turned to China to finance and build this thing. The plan is that China will pay for the upfront costs under a build, operate, transfer model, BOT, and when it recoups that money, it'll hand the canal back to the Cambodians. This is a really common model for the Chinese, and it's the same thing they did for the $2 billion Sihanoukville-Phnom Penh Expressway that opened last year. And those of you who follow our Africa programs, you'll recognize this model from the Nairobi Expressway that the China Road and Bridge Corporation, the same company that built the Sihanoukville Expressway, they did in Kenya as well. So the financing part really isn't that big of an issue. Where the problems do arise is with the Vietnamese and the potential environmental impact of the canal. Let's start with the Vietnamese here. They are concerned that the canal will cause downstream environmental issues and hurt fisheries and farmers in the Mekong Delta. And if you're not familiar with the Mekong Delta, it's an absolutely fascinating part of the world. 20 million people live here. It's one of Asia's rice bowls that produces an absolutely enormous amount of food every year. But it's also facing environmental pressures that are unprecedented due to climate change as saltwater levels rise, making it a lot more difficult to grow crops. So a lot is at stake here. And the worry is that the canal will reduce or even eliminate Cambodia's current dependence on using Vietnamese shippers in the Delta to transport goods. And then, of course, as is the case here in Vietnam and in many parts of Southeast Asia, the China part plays a very big role as well. China has really strong relations with both Cambodia and Vietnam, but geopolitically, Vietnam is way more important to Beijing, without a doubt, given the fact that Vietnam is 100 million people and that it's on the front lines of the great power competition with the U.S. So there was a lot of speculation last December when Chinese President Xi Jinping came to Hanoi and announced an upgrade in diplomatic ties to show that Beijing's relationship with the Vietnamese is better than that with the U.S. Now, you'll recall that President Joe Biden also came to Hanoi last year and upgraded diplomatic ties. The Chinese, well, they wanted to be slightly ahead of the Americans. They didn't want to be on the same level. And so that prompted a lot of speculation that the Vietnamese were going to use that leverage that they had with the Chinese to kill the canal project. They said, okay, if you want the upgrade with us, you want to be ahead of the Americans, we're going to ask you to put the kibosh on the Funan Techo Canal because of the potential damage it's going to do to the Mekong Delta. But that did not happen, and we're not entirely sure why, given the fact that the Vietnamese have said over and over again, they really don't like this project. But here we are today. This thing is now moving forward. There's a lot more press coverage on it, but it's, again, not something that's really on the agenda for those outside of Southeast Asia, and that's why we're going to talk about it today and why I'm thrilled to be joined on the line for the first time on the show by independent journalist Jack Brook, who is based in Cambodia and covered the story last month for Nikkei Asia. Jack, great to have you on the program.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Eric. Happy to be here.
It's great to have you here, and I really enjoyed your story. Let's just kind of start at the beginning. Why is this canal important to the Cambodians? And tell us a little bit about it based on your reporting.
Yeah, sure. So there's several reasons. I mean, first of all, there is a big transition in government last year when Hun Manet, eldest son of long-standing Prime Minister Hun Sen, became the new Prime Minister, changing up the government. And this canal has sort of emerged as like his flagship project that he's been trumpeting as, you know, going to be one of the big accomplishments for his administration early on. So right out of the gate, when he takes office, you know, state-aligned media and government-owned publications start promoting this canal. And what the canal is intended to do would be essentially create a waterway across the country connecting the Phnom Penh port, which is one of the largest ports in the country, with the southwest coast along the Gulf of Thailand, where there are several major ports, especially the Sihanoukville Special Economic Zone and Autonomous Port, which is, you know, the biggest export and import center for Cambodia. And critically, you know, in the eyes of the Cambodian government and canal proponents, this canal would reduce transport costs and make Cambodian exports a lot more competitive on the market. Cambodia's garment sector is, you know, the backbone of its trade economy. So currently, without this canal, there are significant logistics costs and a lot of Cambodian goods get routed through Vietnam's ports, which increases the cost of shipping. So that's the main thing that the canal would be doing.
Yeah, so it makes sense from the Cambodian side to do this. Obviously, there are economic reasons that are very important. And Hun Manet, again, came to power thanks in part to his dad, maybe largely thanks to his dad, and has hit the ground running trying to get the economy going. There's no doubt about that. So the canal makes sense on the economic front. Why does China get involved in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, China has really been powering Cambodia's infrastructure to varying degrees. I mean, it has also hurt Cambodia in some ways, given when, you know, the pandemic hit, a lot of Chinese investment dropped off. And Cambodia, you see, for instance, Sihanoukville, the major city on the coast, which is prior to the pandemic, had a major casino boom. But then once those casinos and hotels that had been, you know, really the product of Chinese investment, once they emptied out, they were filled back in with essentially scam gangs. And that's been, you know, a massive global problem. But not to divert into that, but essentially when Chinese investment is flowing in Cambodia, things are great. But then when it dries up, it leaves gaping problems, which can get filled by bad actors, as happened in Sihanoukville. And I've covered, you know, other infrastructure projects in Cambodia, and, you know, they're usually hyped a lot. But then something happens, the Chinese funder might pull out, and then the government sort of scrambling to either start or finish what's kind of like a half-done project. And this often has significant problems for local communities, you know, who might have been evicted or are forced to sort of live with the consequences of a half-done development project. So in this canal, I think it's a way for Cambodia to really shift away from dependence on Vietnam for its shipping, and that, however, would require further, you know, embrace of Chinese investment and relying on China to sort of help it pivot away from its historic dependence on Vietnam, as well as kind of moving away from the political leverage that Vietnam has had over Cambodia, given its control of the southern part of the Mekong River and Delta, which Vietnam has, you know, used to its advantage over Cambodia in the past. One really interesting example that I came across when researching the story is in the 90s, Vietnam actually shut down shipping along the Mekong Delta, which, you know, had a significant impact for Cambodia's trade. And this was over a political dispute. There's currently an agreement between the two countries to allow for, you know, freedom of shipping. But I think Cambodia overall, Cambodians feel very perhaps insecure over Vietnam's hold on this important trade route.
Let's also remember that the Vietnamese-Cambodian relationship is one fraught throughout history. So the Khmer Empire, the Cambodians, for a long time controlled this part of Vietnam, or what is now today Vietnam. The Khmer Empire came all the way into the Mekong Delta. And over time now, the Cambodians have retreated back to where they are, and the Vietnamese have become more powerful, leading up to in the 1970s when the Vietnamese rolled into Cambodia to remove Pol Pot. And that is still a sensitive issue in terms of the border tensions and the relationships. And there's a lot of political tension that exists between these two cultures. So the canal kind of touches on a lot of those open wounds that are still there in this very complex historical relationship. But when we talk about the Vietnamese concerns, in your report, you mentioned that there are clearly economic reasons. So the canal would reduce Cambodian dependence on Vietnam waterways and Vietnam shippers to get goods out to market. There's also a concern about the environmental impact on this. And you've quoted Brian Eiler from the Stimson Center, who we also did, by the way, a fantastic Q&A on our website. And I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And he too talks about the environmental concerns. And then there are also security concerns. Can you walk us through all three of those Vietnamese concern? And again, we want to get to why the Vietnamese aren't taking more action, potentially using their leverage with the Chinese to try and either change the project or cancel the project outright. But walk us through those three Vietnamese concerns.
Yeah, I mean, I think just beginning with the environmental. So as Brian Eiler has pointed out very well previously, the project is coming, if you look at the map that was presented by the Cambodian authorities to the Mekong River Commission Secretariat, which is the entity that, you know, oversees projects on the Mekong.
And that's a multinational group, right? In Southeast Asia, correct?
Yes, that's a multinational group. You know, Cambodia, Laos, China, Vietnam. And basically, when there's going to be infrastructure that is affecting the Mekong or Mekong tributary, the nation that's building it has to submit information to the commission informing them what they're going to do. And so Cambodia did, in fact, do that. However, they described the project as impacting the tributary of the Mekong and a tributary of the Mekong, basically. But if you look at the map, the canal opens up off of the Mekong River. So initially, there was big concern that this is going to really disrupt the flow of the Mekong, which the Cambodian government has pushed back against. And it does seem that, you know, they do have like a waterway lock to prevent that. But that was a big concern. Another concern that is still unresolved is basically that this canal is going to cut across a critical, you know, floodplain in the Mekong Delta. And there is not any indication that I've seen or that I think, you know, anybody watching this has seen of how the Cambodian government expects to like mitigate the issues that could arise from that, you know, of disrupting the natural flooding that helps power the agricultural engine of both Cambodia and Vietnam. So I think not only could this affect Vietnam, it could also affect Cambodian farmers. And in the documents that have been, you know, publicly available, the Cambodian authorities say that the only impact of this canal is going to be dust and noise pollution during the construction, which is, you know, I think with the project of this size, that's not really accurate. And there's not really been any environmental impact assessment that has been released, not even the Mekong River Commission, which oversees these kind of projects. They don't even seem to have had any of this information shared with them, because when I reached out to them, they said they, you know, were still seeking more information from Cambodian authorities. So that's the biggest environmental issue, and just the lack of transparency, I suppose, over that.
And that's part and parcel then of dealing with the Chinese as well, who are not very transparent in their dealings. There apparently has been a feasibility study that's been completed on the project, but no one really understands the environmental impact of that feasibility study, if I understand correctly.
Well, actually, on the feasibility study, so there's been a bit of conflicting information based on some articles that have been out. But if you look at the state-aligned media, Fresh News. In October, basically, the Chinese state-owned firm that is working on the construction of this canal, they began a feasibility study. And I don't believe that that feasibility study launched in October has been completed yet. However, the Cambodian Public Works and Transport Minister has already begun declaring that this canal is going to break ground this year when, you know, there's been no environmental impact assessment that's been made public or shared with, you know, the regional body overseeing the Mekong. Presumably, there has been no information about the possible impacts that's been made publicly available. The Cambodian government officials said they did share this information with their counterparts in Hanoi when they met in December.
So the environmental concerns for the Vietnamese is that the flow of water coming in from the Mekong will be impacted. This could affect the entire ecosystem that really requires in these marshes and these deltas fresh supplies of water to come in to compete with the rising salt water that's there, but also, again, just to refresh for the rice crops and whatnot. And if that flow of water is impacted, that could have an impact on, or adverse impact on, Vietnamese agriculture. Is that the way I understand it?
Yes, that's the key.
Okay, now we have this economic impact. So the Vietnamese have made a very thriving business out of shipping Cambodian goods. Now the canal will take goods to the Gulf of Thailand directly. Ships can come and pick up at the port of Kep, and they don't need then to go into Vietnamese ports. How much do you think in this discussion the economic interests outweigh the environmental concerns and the other concerns related to security? How do those kind of lay out?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I think at the end of the day, it's an issue of politics. I don't necessarily know how much Vietnam is truly concerned about maybe the loss of goods flowing through it. I think it's more the fact that Cambodia has to rely on Vietnam and Vietnam will have that over Cambodia. And I think that's also kind of the driving psychological point with Cambodia. You know, as you mentioned earlier, with this kind of historic tension between, you know, the two countries, I think that's really at the core of why this is controversial. And maybe I think in some ways the environmental aspect, which is still extremely, extremely important, but I think that is also being used as a front for some of these deeper political concerns, which are not necessarily being raised explicitly by, you know, government officials on either side. Though I think the Cambodian officials have been perhaps more explicit about some of these deeper psychological wounds. I think on this note, one of the best analysis of this canal that I've seen came from a Cambodian researcher, Sotiarok Sok, who wrote a piece in The Diplomat where he noted that Hun Manet, prime minister, was using the expression breathing through our own nose to refer to the canal, you know, which is like a very visceral way of understanding this infrastructure project. And, you know, if you look at the name of the canal, Funan Techo, or Funan refers to the empire that was the precursor for the Khmer Cambodian Empire that controlled that area. And as you mentioned, Vietnam sort of over the course of some time chipped away and kind of claimed that area. And then it was solidified as being, you know, Vietnamese under French colonial rule. So Cambodians are still very hurt by that loss of territory. And there's still a lot of, you know, Khmer speaking people living in the southern Mekong Delta. So that's really a significant thing for Cambodians.
Now, why is it called the, you said Funan Techo or is it Techo?
Techo, sorry, yeah.
So, okay, just want to make sure I was getting it right. So why is it called Funan Techo? There is a different name for it, but maybe do you have any insight for us on the history of the Funan Techo part of it?
Yeah, I mean, regarding the name Funan specifically, that is referring to the Funan Empire, which stretched across the southern Mekong Delta and is seen as a precursor to the Khmer, the Angkor Empire, which is really the pinnacle of Khmer civilization. That's where we get the Angkor Wat and all of those temples that Cambodia is famous for. So that name is really drawing on the historic connection that Cambodians feel to that waterway, you know, of the Mekong, which they lost definitively under French colonial rule when the French transferred that territory at the time called Cochin China. They transferred that to, you know, merge with Vietnam. And that's, I think, reclaiming that is what the name whistles to.
Yeah, you can hear the whistles there. There's a lot of history in here. You quoted Cambodia's top government scientist, Sok Touch, who is the president of the Royal Academy, and you quoted him in your story that he implied that Vietnam's real fear here isn't environment, isn't security, isn't economics, but it's the loss of control over Cambodia. And he said that Hanoi should mind its own business. And I just thought that was fascinating when you talked about that. Really, at the end of the day, this isn't about anything else other than politics. And that seems to be the main takeaway.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, you know, not to minimize the environmental concerns, because those are very valid. And I do think, you know, that's legitimate. But I think the environmental concerns perhaps are being given extra weight by the fact that they're also doing the work of carrying these political concerns. So yeah, I think that comment from Sopchuk is really on point, because it highlights that Cambodians are saying this canal is core to our, you know, what we feel like we need to do to develop as a nation, and who is Vietnam to try to restrict us from doing that. You know, this is the way that, you know, I think the Cambodian authorities would see it, is this canal is being built on, you know, our land. So why do you get to prevent us from doing that? Or, you know, why are you trying to waive these environmental concerns when what we really need to do at this point is develop and have greater economic sovereignty and not be under your thumb? However, of course, this project being a build, operate, transfer project funded by, you know, the Chinese state, they are, you know, making that shift away from Vietnam by going, you know, even further into China's hands in a way.
So there's also security concerns, as we mentioned, and this came up a lot last year when the Chinese made progress in building out a naval base, the Ream Naval Base. And then back in December, the first Chinese warships actually docked at the Ream Naval Base. Now, the Chinese insist that the naval base is not for their ships, it's for the Cambodian Navy. Not entirely sure how many people actually believe that, but it, when we talk about Chinese naval expansion around the world, the Ream Naval Base always comes up. American and Vietnamese observers have some concerns that the Funan Teko Canal will also be used for security and for naval purposes. Hard to imagine when you look at the proportions and dimensions of the canal. It's not that deep and it's not that wide, so I'm not entirely sure how it could be used for any significant naval warship or security reasons. Nonetheless, the Vietnamese and the Americans are kind of getting nervous about it. What did your reporting find in terms of the security aspects of it?
Yeah, so I am with you as well in the sense that I am skeptical that this canal would have significant security risks. But what was raised by some is that there could be brown water patrols, which, you know, is basically like river boats moving, you know, down the canal and onto the Mekong. And that would, in theory, provide, say, China with a way to access the Mekong through Cambodia. But I don't necessarily see there being any indication of that happening. But if you, you know, if you do talk with people who are following this project, who, you know, do have some degree of influence, that's something that they're concerned about. And if you read Vietnamese commentary about the canal, it's a bit more vague than that, but there's just concern of like, hey, China's spending money in Cambodia, and who knows, this could be used for military purposes, which I think is something that happens a lot, you know, when China is helping Cambodia build something. And I don't necessarily think with this canal, though, that the security is a huge concern. I think it's more just like the geopolitical shift that like Cambodia is no longer, like Vietnam would have like, we control this critical waterway for you. They would no longer have that edge. And I think that's potentially, you know, that's the main aspect of security here.
So if that's the case, if the Vietnamese really don't like this project, and it sounds like for political reasons, economic reasons, and security fears, okay, we won't actually say they're legitimate, but they're concerns, there's a number of reasons why the Vietnamese would rather this project go away. I'm going to ask you to speculate here, because nobody knows for sure. Why don't you think the Vietnamese use their leverage with the Chinese, and they have considerable leverage with the Chinese, and they know how to manage this relationship with the Chinese? Why don't you think they use that to cashier this project and say, you know what, Beijing, if you want our love, you're going to have to put the kibosh on the Funan Teko Canal? They didn't do that. And so it doesn't seem like the Vietnamese have any other card to play other than pressuring the Chinese if they want to stop this project.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. And I definitely have to preface this by saying my area of knowledge is limited in analyzing decisions of the Vietnamese government. But I would guess is one aspect to this is the fact that this project is coming out under Hun Manet after nearly 40 years. His father, you know, controlled Cambodia for nearly 40 years. Then following this transition of power, Hun Manet is the fresh face of Cambodian leadership. And he presumably also wants to, you know, have good enough relations with Vietnam as a significant neighbor. And so I imagine wanting to ameliorate any tensions with Hun Manet's new administration is probably a significant consideration for Hanoi.
And I guess, and again, I haven't spoken to any China experts on this in Beijing who follow this story closely, but I'm just curious too, if I could speak to them, I'd ask them, why would China create problems with two of its closest friends in Southeast Asia? Vietnam and Cambodia are very strong friends. Again, Vietnam's relationship with China, highly complex, highly, highly complex in the sense that it's a love-hate relationship that has been borne out over centuries. That being said, as we've seen under Xi in the past 5 or 6 years in particular, the Vietnamese-Chinese relationship has grown very, very close. And so I'd be curious to hear from a China expert who studies this, why they would insert this kind of tension into the region when, again, 1.7 billion in the scope of the BRI, not that huge, but it is potentially transformative for the Cambodians. There's no doubt. What's the big takeaway that you want people who are just coming to this story to know about it? What's the most important aspect of it in your view?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important aspect is that at the end of the day, what the Cambodian government and I think honestly many Cambodian people feel is that they want their nation to develop. They want to have access to better economic opportunity. They don't want to be under the thumb of a significant neighbor such as Vietnam. And so they believe that this canal, you know, whether rightly or wrongly, is going to, as the, you know, state-aligned media say, be a game changer for Cambodia's economy. However, as is typical with a lot of these infrastructure projects that Cambodia tries to implement, they are not being transparent. They're not taking into account, at least in a public way, any environmental impacts and also human impacts, you know, whether that's the farmers who might be have their agriculture disrupted in Vietnam or the Cambodians, the many Cambodians who are going to be living along this waterway and could get evicted. So I think they're moving very quickly and they're not looking at how this could impact the environment and people in the Mekong Delta.
And as far as you know, this thing is good to go, right? They're going to move forward on this.
Actually, I think there's a fair amount of uncertainty. I do think that this project will eventually happen, but I don't know if it's going to happen on the timeline that the Cambodian government has stated, which is, you know, in 2024, at the end of the year. I think as more concerns are raised in the media and in diplomatic channels, there may be some slowing down as well as, you know, it's still not 100% sure that China is going to go through and fund this. I think, you know, we'll see what happens. I think nothing's for sure until they start breaking ground because there have been a lot of big Cambodian development projects that have been, you know, highly trumpeted and then sort of fade away because the Chinese funding dries up.
No, that's interesting that it's not 100% locked in yet. So the Vietnamese still have time to get in there if they want to try and pressure the Chinese. There's still time apparently to do that.
Yeah, I would guess that that's the case because it's not until they start breaking ground, I think, that this thing is going to take some time. And I think when they do start breaking ground, there's going to be other issues that come with all the people along the way. Nobody in these communities that are along the projected route of the canal, nobody has had any meaningful consultation or, you know, there's been no plan to relocate the hundreds, maybe thousands of people who are on the canal's direct path. So I think it's, you know, to actually get this thing going is going to, you know, it's going to take some time.
The article is Cambodia to divert Mekong trade via China-built canal, vexing Vietnam. It's in Nikkei Asia. We're going to put a link to that in the show notes, and it was written by Jack Brook, who is an independent journalist based in Phnom Penh, Cambodia. And Jack, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today to kind of walk us through what is a very complicated story. We'd love to have the chance to check back in with you as the canal drama kind of unfolds, whether this happens or doesn't happen. It's an absolutely fascinating story that touches on so many aspects of China-Southeast Asia relations. So really appreciate your insights today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Eric. And I'll also be looking to see what happens with this canal.
Well, that's it. And again, we'll put the link to Jack's story in the show notes. If you'd like to follow the work that we're doing over at the China Global South Project, your support is what keeps us going. We're totally nonprofit, nonpartisan, agenda-free journalism, focusing on everything that China's doing in Southeast Asia, also in Africa, the Middle East, and elsewhere. Go to chinaglobalsouth.com/subscribe, and you can sign up for a subscription. If, of course, you are a student or teacher, just email me, eric@chinaglobalsouth.com, and I'll send you a half-off discount link that you can use to sign up. So that'll do it for this edition of the show. I'll be back again next week with Cobus for another episode of the China Global South podcast. Until then, thank you so much for listening.
The discussion continues online. Follow the China Global South Project on Twitter @ChinaGSProject and share your thoughts on today's show, or head over to our website at chinaglobalsouth.com, where you can subscribe to receive full access to more than 5,000 articles and podcasts. Once again, that's chinaglobalsouth.com.